04-1059, Lorain County Bar Association versus Carl Dole is the next case. Ms. Sabella.
Thank you. May it please the court, my name is Mary L. Sabella, and I represent Carl Knoll, the respondent in this matter. Mr. Chief Justice, may I please reserve 5 minutes of my time for rebuttal? Thank you. The first issue in this case is an issue that applies not only to Mr. Knoll's case, but to every disciplinary case in the system. And that issue is the obligation upon a relator to produce evidence that the relator intends to use against the respondent to the respondent. That is a due process issue. It cuts across the board in terms of all cases. How can a respondent effectively defend themselves against allegations brought against them if they do not have the opportunity to view the evidence, to do appropriate investigation with respect to the evidence, and to determine whether or not there are any particular motions that should be filed with the court prior to the day of hearing? In this particular case, on the day of the hearing, Relator's Exhibits 13 and 14, various documents from Judge Zaleski's courtroom relating to Mr. Knoll and an incident that occurred in Judge Zaleski's courtroom with Mr. Knoll. That information, Relator contends, was not produced earlier because Relator didn't know about it earlier. Well, let's look at what Relator's position was with respect to Mr. Knoll and the timing of Relator's coming by or coming into possession of this information. Relator's position with respect to Mr. Knoll was that Mr. Knoll had notice of a problem with his secretary and that he did not take appropriate remedial measures in a timely manner. That's the essence of their case. Well, one of the things that occurred in discovery was a request for production of documents, and Relator, in fact, produced a whole line of documents. We would respectfully submit that that was notice to the relator that respondent wanted all the documentary evidence that relator was going to use against the respondent. Matter of fact, this court in Cincinnati Bar Association versus Marzik suspended Mr. Marzik for 6 months for not revealing the statement of a tow truck driver with respect to an injury case until the appeal occurred. In Cincinnati Bar Association versus Wallace, this court publicly reprimanded Ms. Wallace for not disclosing to opposing counsel as part of a response to interrogatories a publicly recorded deed.
Counsel, when, to your knowledge, did the realtor get this information? Because I thought they received it themselves fairly late in the game.
Well, what Relator put on the record is that on Thursday, March 4, when Relator was interviewing Judge Janice, who was a disclosed witness in the case, Judge Janice made some statements to Relator. And if you look at Judge Janice's testimony, he says that based upon the questions that Relator was asking to him, Judge Janice perceived that timing of the notice was an issue. So he then told, Judge Janice then told Relator, you should go see Judge Zaleski. The next day, Friday, May 5, Relator speaks to Judge Zaleski. Doesn't actually get possession of the certified transcript from the court reporter until Monday, March 8, which is 2 days before the hearing, but clearly had notice and information that there was an issue with respect to Judge Zaleski the Friday of March 5.
So it was really a very short time frame. We don't have a period of them hanging on to information for months and not giving it to you, correct?
Yes, but unfortunately, respondent knows nothing about it until the morning of hearing.
Okay, and the morning of the hearing, you have, I believe, one panel member doesn't show up.
That's correct, Your Honor.
Did you ask for a continuance based on this new information?
We did not ask for continuance. We objected to the introduction of any of that evidence. And finally, at the conclusion of Relator's case, when Relator moved for the admission of Relator's Exhibits 13 and 14, the panel finally granted respondent's motion. With respect to a continuance and the fact that there were only two members of the panel present, I would cite this court to its own rules, Governance Rule 5, Section 6, where this court, subsection D3 of Rule 6, where this court says a majority of the panel shall constitute a quorum. I respectfully submit that this court has already determined that two members of a hearing panel constitute a quorum, and therefore they can transact business.
But I may be wrong on this because I haven't really looked at it closely. I think we've ruled that way just so that if one is missing, you can still go forward, but I believe that you still have the right to object and not go forward if the third member is missing.
I guess I'm at a loss, Your Honor, as to the basis for the objection if the court has already ruled that two members of the panel constitute a quorum and are authorized to hear the matter and to transact business.
Well, counsel, your objection then to the Judge Zaleski's information was sustained, and not is that true?
It was ultimately sustained.
Right, and then taken out of the mix for consideration of the panel.
Unfortunately, no. That's the problem. When you read the board's findings of fact recommendations, they quote extensively from Relators 13 and 14 the information that ultimately the panel ruled was not admitted into evidence. And that was a second prong of our argument in our brief, or second proposition of law, is that if you have evidence that's not admitted, you can't then use that evidence to decide the case. And that's the conundrum. And that's the problem with allowing Relators to, at the 11th hour, bring forward new evidence, because you've put the respondent in an awkward situation at that point. Basically, what they do is they object, they argue as to why they didn't have time to investigate and that the matter should not be admitted. Ultimately, it wasn't admitted. However, the panel at that point, or at least this particular panel, determined that they wanted to hear what it was about before they made their ruling. So they heard all the evidence, and then ultimately they included the excluded evidence in their findings of fact. That's the problem. And apropos of the finding evidence at the 11th hour, I received a telephone call and a fax from a Relator yesterday telling me that he has yet again discovered some additional information from Judge Zaleski and intended to bring it before this court today. I respectfully submit that goes back to the original issue, and that is the obligation of a relator in a disciplinary case to produce the evidence that they intend to use against a respondent in a timely manner. Because how can a respondent have a full and fair hearing if they don't know what the evidence is and have an opportunity to investigate it and to confront the witnesses with respect to that evidence? My understanding of Relator's position is that when Mr. Knoll testified with respect to the Rodriguez case, he did not testify truthfully. I would commend to your attention page 178 of the hearing transcript, and here's the question. So what did you do after receiving the legal malpractice complaints in the Rodriguez case? Answer, I immediately turned it over to my carrier. Question, what's the status of that case? Answer, it's pending. As a matter of fact, I believe there's a pretrial coming up later this month. Question, so the Rodriguez legal malpractice case is still pending? Answer, yeah. My insurance defense counsel is handling that. That was a true statement on March 10, 2004, the date that hearing occurred. It's still a true statement. The Rodriguez legal malpractice case is still pending. And I was able to have a brief telephone conversation with Tim Johnson, who was the lawyer at Weston Heard that had been assigned by the carrier to defend Mr. Knoll. And Mr. Johnson indicates to me that the carrier's instructions to him are to continue to defend Mr. Knoll. The other issues in this case, as I stated before, related to the board, the panel, and the board's use of evidence that was not admitted to base their findings and to then determine that the respondent should be sanctioned based upon that not admitted evidence. That also is an issue that cuts across the board in every case, whether it be civil case or criminal case. If it's not admitted into evidence, it can't be considered by the trier of fact when determining the judgment or the sentence to be imposed. I mean, that's just plain, simple, fundamental proposition of our law. And that is that you have someone who brings forth their allegations. The person who is defending against them has an opportunity to investigate, review, and then the evidence that is admitted is what, in fact, the trier of fact makes their decision based upon. And with respect to the timing, I'd also point out, as I say, Relator's theory of the case was that Mr. Knoll had notice and didn't appropriately remediate the situation. It's interesting that on February 27th, which is about 2 weeks before the hearing, a week before Relator's conversation with Judge Janice, Ms. Castro, Mr. Knoll's secretary, is deposed. If you read closely Ms. Castro's deposition, that's Relator 17, she specifically states that when Mr. Knoll returned from the October 2002 hearing before Judge Janice, he was yelling and screaming at her with respect to the green card being missing, and in her words, he revoked her authority to sign for anything. She also then testified for the last 7 months of her employ, and she left the employ of Mr. Knoll in May of 2003. So if you back count 7 months, we're all the way back to November of 2002. From November of 2002 all the way to the end of her employment, Mr. Knoll is telling her to do things and then demanding that she provide him proof that she, in fact, has done what he has asked her to do. And he consistently tells her, if you don't bring me the proof, don't come back. We respectfully submit that that is remediation. That is Mr. Knoll's taking on of the situation and attempting to correct the behavior of an employee who had been a longtime employee of his for over 10 years, who now started to have some problems. He told her what he wanted to do. He required her to prove that she was doing that, what she asked her to do. And with that, Your Honor, I'd like to reserve the rest of my
counsel,
time.
Counsel, let me ask you before you step away. There's an allegation that there was a personal relationship between Mr. Knoll and Ms. Castro?
Yes, Your Honor.
And
That's not disputed by the parties, but they were both unmarried adults.
I'm not commenting on the propriety, except for the fact I get the impression from the readings here that there's some link between the personal relationship and his inability or reluctance to appropriately confront her with the shortcomings that now have reflected on his ability to practice law effectively and act as an officer of the court. And I think that's maybe the crux of this problem.
Well, it's Relator's position that after the hearing with Judge Janice in October or the appearance before the grievance committee that Mr. Knoll should have went back and immediately fired her. And his not immediately firing her was his failure to take remedial action. And we would posit that there are a number of different ways to take remedial action against a long-term employee who has served faithfully, who is now having problems. And it's typical in an employment situation that you have multiple reprimands before you finally terminate. So we would indicate that, in fact, the record does support that Mr. Knoll reprimanded her for a period of time and then finally terminated her when she could not produce to him the proof that she had, in fact, done the service of publication in the Tomko matter.
Thank you, Ms. Abella.
Thank you.
Mr. Cook.
Please, the court. My name is Dan Cook. I'm the lawyer for the relator in this matter, the Lorain County Bar Association. I want to address very briefly this evidentiary issue that was first brought up. What actually happened there was I met with Judge Janis in preparation for the hearing on Thursday. The hearing was scheduled for the following Wednesday. Judge Janis, and this is in the record, told me that Mr. Knoll had had a problem with another one of our judges, Judge Zaleski. The very next day, I went and spoke to Judge Zaleski. Judge Zaleski told me that he had a contempt problem with Mr. Knoll, same problem where he wasn't in court, found him in contempt because he wasn't answering notices from the court. But Judge Zaleski was not aware, could not recall the case number or whether or not there was a record of it. I immediately contacted the court reporter and was able to get a transcript of the proceedings that occurred, the contempt proceedings, on Monday. Before the hearing began, I went to Ms. Sabella and I gave her this, and I told her this, and I provided this information to her that morning of the hearing. It was not an attempt on my part to surprise her or to undercut her. There had been extensive exchange of discovery before this hearing. It was simply a matter that came to my attention very late, and I gave it to her. There were two documents. There was the transcript of the proceedings, the contempt proceedings, and there was a certified copy of a court order finding Mr. Knoll in contempt. Those two documents, as I recall, were marked Exhibits 14, 13, and 14. They were not admitted into evidence. However, and again, the record is replete with this, there was substantial oral testimony from Mr. Knoll himself regarding these events, regarding the finding of contempt, regarding the failure to appear before the court, regarding his failure to get the proper notices. All of that came in by oral testimony, and properly so. The comments of Judge Zaleski were not hearsay. This was an event that occurred where Mr. Knoll was present and the judge reprimanded him, found him in contempt, and Mr. Knoll testified extensively about these events. And therefore, and there was no objection to that testimony made when it was offered. And therefore, the panel certainly had the right to base its decision in part upon that oral testimony, even though the two paper documents were excluded. Now I want to talk a little bit about the facts of this thing and why we're here and why this thing is so upsetting to our County Bar Association. First of all, there is no question that three matters were neglected here. Three clients lost their claims because of Mr. Knoll's failure to file a case. In the Lengo case, he represented her for 2.5 years, never filed the case. In the Tomco matter, in the Tomco grievance, he represented her for over 2 years. The case was filed, but then dismissed because he never got process. And in the Rodriguez case, he filed the case, but the case was dismissed because he didn't answer discovery and he didn't go to two pretrial hearings. Now, those are clearly neglected matters. The thing that makes this case so unusual is the defense that's offered. The defense is, this is not my fault. My secretary of some 10 years sabotaged me. She intentionally didn't tell me about telephone calls, hid notices, covered up communications. She intentionally did this. And therefore, I shouldn't be responsible for this conduct. So the question in this case is, what is a lawyer's responsibility in the supervision of a non-lawyer when that non-lawyer is guilty of misconduct? I submit to the court that if in the case of Ball versus disciplinary counsel, which was decided in 1993, this court sets down the standards for that question. And the standards are that the lawyer must set up safeguards to ensure that the things that he's delegating to non-lawyers are done properly. And I submit to the court that that's where Mr. Knoll failed miserably, just miserably. Think of some of the incidences, and I put this in my brief, of what happened here. I say there were four warning bells that occurred over a period of 2.5 years where action should have been taken, and it wasn't taken. The first warning bell is the Lengel affair with the emails. Mrs. Lengel retains Mr. Knoll to handle a case for her, an automobile accident case. She emails him and says, basically, what's going on with my case? What's happening here? Knoll looks in his file, has no file, this is all in the record, has no file on Mrs. Lengel, goes to the courthouse, realizes that no case is filed, and then emails back to her, basically, it's necessary that I talk to you. Please call me. He doesn't tell her that he has no file. He doesn't tell her that there's no case filed on her behalf. He just emails back, call me. She immediately emails back to him and says, I've been calling you for months. Your secretary tells me you're never there. Your secretary tells me there's no need for you to talk to me. Your secretary says all is going well with the case. What does Knoll do? Basically, he does nothing. He can't remember if he even tried to call this woman back. First warning bell. Second warning bell. The Judge Zaleski affair. Judge Zaleski calls a local lawyer before him and says, I'm going to find you in contempt because you're not coming to hearings. And I've had enough of it. This has been going on for a year. Knoll says, well, my secretary didn't give me notice of these hearings. My secretary hasn't told me about it. Judge Zaleski says, I've heard this before. I told you a year ago to fire your secretary because of the same problem. And I'm going to find you in contempt. And he does, and he fines him $200. The third warning bell, which is even more unbelievable. Mrs. Lengel files a malpractice action against Mr. Knoll because of his failure to file her lawsuit. Knoll claims he never got notice of the subpoena or the summons, never got notice of the default motion that the court files, never got notice of the hearing on the motion for default judgment. So Judge Janice renders a default judgment against him on this malpractice case. The judgment creditor garnishes Mr. Knoll's bank account. Finally, he wakes up. There's a judgment against me for some $34,000 for malpractice. He sends his secretary, Juanita Castro, over to the court to get to the file. And guess what? When the file comes back, there's no green card in it. Now, I use the term green card to mean the card that we know about when we get certified mail. So there's some question as to service. Judge Janice, a motion is filed to set aside the judgment. Judge Janice holds a hearing on it, and he tells Mr. Knoll, October 10th, 2002, he tells Mr. Knoll, before I granted this default judgment, I made darn sure there was good service there. I would not grant a default judgment against a local lawyer unless I was sure there was service. And I'm telling you that that card was signed by your secretary, Juanita Castro. And I'm very upset that it's now missing from my court file. The last warning bell. The Bar Association gets involved in all of this stuff because we get these grievances. So we send three notices to Mr. Knoll to answer, to reply in accordance with our committee's rules. No reply, nothing. So we finally issue a subpoena to bring him before the Bar Association's grievance committee to find out what the heck is going on here. He comes in, basically says the same thing he said to Judge Janice, to Judge Zaleski. I didn't get the notices. My secretary never gave me the notices. And the Bar Association says to him, our committee, well, my God, Mr. Knoll, what's going on here? Look at this. Fire her. How can you have a secretary that lies to you, that covers up your mail, that doesn't give you your telephone calls, that allows a default judgment to be taken against you for malpractice, and allows you to be found in contempt by a local judge? Does he fire her? Does he do anything? No. He continues to have her in his employ for almost another 8 months, and after during that period, we get the Tomko grievance.
Counsel, you took the position that the suspension of 1 year, 6 months stayed is appropriate.
Yes, we did.
And that's still a position of...
Yes, it is, Your Honor.
How does that compare to what we did in Buzz Ball's case?
6 months, Your Honor. Ball was 6 months. And our committee looked at it. It isn't my position. I brought this before my committee, before I told the panel. The committee considered it, and we adopted a resolution of 6 months based upon Ball. That's exactly. And in Ball, there were no warning signs. In Ball, immediately when Attorney Ball found out about it, he fired his secretary and paid the money back.
Were there economic effects in Ball?
Yes, $200,000. In Ball, the secretary had taken $200,000. But Attorney Ball, in the case, paid that money back immediately.
What about this case? I know it's indicated there were economic...
Well, that's another
losses.
Troubling aspect, and I don't know if it's proper, but I'm going to tell the court this anyway. At that hearing, their questions came up about insurance. And Mr. Knoll says in the record, my insurance company's going to take care of this. Now, the hearing was on March 10th of this year. I find out, literally a couple of days ago, and I prepared for this thing a couple of days ago, and it comes to my attention. I find out that in November of 2003, Oblick, Mr. Ball's insurance company, has filed a declaratory judgment in our court, Lorain County, to set the insurance aside for failure to properly fill out the application form, for false statements made on the application form. That was never brought up at the hearing. Mr. Knoll led that panel to believe there was insurance, and he knew that there was a declaratory judgment action pending during that time.
Mr. Cook, let me follow up. I hate to break your train here. I feel like we're in a trial court. But I have a follow-up question to Justice Pfeiffer's. I guess I'm wondering why the Bar Association, you or the Bar Association, would not try to distinguish Ball and say that there really should be a greater sanction here than in Ball. There's a pattern here that there, as I recall, was not. Well, Ball was before us twice, but there seems to be a pattern here that would seem to be a little somewhat different than Ball.
Your Honor, first of all, when I researched it, Ball was the only case that I found that was even close to this thing. And I don't know what to tell you other than the fact that our committee has 15 members on it. Three are lay people, 12 are lawyers. I went to the committee as the council representative and said, here it is, fellas.
Members.
What do you think? And we hashed it out. And the only thing I can tell you is there were some members of our committee who felt very strongly that this should be a bigger sanction. But the vote was, I was instructed as counsel for the committee to say 6 months, and that's what I did. That was a vote that was taken on our committee, Your Honor, based upon a discussion of the members and the facts and Ball.
The Bar Association, and the board has recommended that there, of course, be a CLE course in law office management and the appointment of a mentor. I assume the bar is comfortable with being able to monitor someone. Like, I guess my concern is 6 months out, he has a pattern here of, you wonder really knows what it means to be a professional. And is the monitoring, you're convinced that you can assure us that as well as you can that the monitoring will be, that you'll have an effective moderator from the monitor from this bar standpoint?
I do not feel that comfortable in telling you that. In fact, I tell you, my experience in these matters is just the reverse. We can't get people to monitor, and the monitoring is very difficult. I have no comfort in that system whatsoever. As a lawyer in Lorain County, Your Honor, I'm not going to give this court assurances that that monitoring system works. The truth of the matter is, when we try to get somebody to monitor another lawyer, it's almost a universal negative. The answer is, I've got enough problems with my own practice, let alone trying to monitor.
If we follow the board's recommendation and order the appointment of a monitor, what, I mean, you're saying to me that may be an ineffectual part of the order, of our order.
That's what my experience. That's exactly what I'm saying to Your Honor, that I don't believe that it is an effectual system.
Counsel, I'm wondering about one other aspect. Apparently, clients couldn't reach him, whether he was in the office or not. The secretary was saying he wasn't. Lorain County's not that big a place. Did lawyers see him around the courthouse, or was he? So he was well known to the lawyers
judges. Yes. Oh yes.
I'm wondering about why the Bar Association, why somebody didn't just you send them three mail notices, nobody phones them.
Oh yeah, we phoned him. We got the same thing. We phoned him. We even phoned his house.
Nobody said at the courthouse, "Hey, you know, we've been looking for you."
Well, and then this isn't in the record, but yes, that's what happened eventually, and that's how we got him served with a subpoena. We got him at the courthouse.
Okay.
Counsel, did you just say you phoned his house, too?
Yeah, I don't know if that's in the record, but I did not. I was not the investigating lawyer.
Well, I'm a little confused with this whole scenario. Is it true that the secretary was sabotaging him, or is that a convenient excuse? I still don't know that.
I don't either, Your Honor. I don't know either. That's the evidence. The evidence is that I did not get these calls. I did not get these notices. That was explained to Judge Janice. That was explained to, or the excuse given to Judge Janice. That was the excuse given to Judge Zaleski. That was the excuse given to our committee. It's a very strange thing. There is this romantic arrangement, and I keep thinking, what the heck is going on here? If there's a romantic relations, why is she torpedoing him? At the same time, if the romantic relationship is over, why doesn't he fire her? I don't know what was going on there, but I know this, that three citizens of Lorain County suffered losses because of his failure to take care of business. And the excuses that have been given for these 3 years that I never got these messages. Can you think of it? I mean, it's unbelievable. A lawyer is brought before a local judge because his secretary doesn't give him notices of hearings.
You need to begin your summation, counsel.
A lawyer is found a default judgment because he doesn't get service. What lawyer would tolerate such a secretary?
Did he have a successful practice besides these three problems?
I think so, yes. I don't know if he wouldn't. I mean, we have these. We've never had any prior grievances against Mr. Noel. With all due respect, he was president of our bar association at one time. I mean, I don't know what happened here, but as I say, I know we had this problem, and I think the problem deserves a suspension. That's why I'm here. And to simply ask for a public reprimand in light of these circumstances, I think is inappropriate. There should be a suspension here, and there should be some education or something and done to properly sanction this.
I think we understand your position. Thank you, Mr. Cook.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Ms. Sabella, you've saved a little more than a minute of your time.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Counsel, let me just say to you, because you've raised the issue of the Judge Zaleski matter.
Yes.
You've raised the issue of the oblique thing that was called to your attention in a tardy fashion. It seems to me there's plenty here for us to impose the sentence or the discipline sentence, may be the inappropriate word, that the board recommended, and even more if we chose to, without any of those things to which you object. So make your best argument
on why we should
drop it below and shouldn't perhaps go up.
Okay. Well, my argument would be look at the mitigation. And if you read that mitigation portion of relator's objections, we set forth all the mitigation in the record. It's 30 years without a problem. This problem is related to a time period, and I respectfully disagree with my colleague. If you read Ms. Castro's deposition, which is Relator's Exhibit 17, she does, in fact, admit, Your Honor, may I continue?
Yeah. Okay.
She does, in fact, admit that there were some times she didn't give him messages, there were things that she did.
Okay.
So in answer to Justice O'Connor's query about whether the secretary was really doing this, there's evidence in the record that, in fact, the secretary was really doing this.
We have to accept that. So why should we drop below what we did to Buzzball, former state representative, had a lot of things going for him in mitigation as well? Now,
Because as I read the Ball case, this court said Mr. Ball totally failed to supervise his secretary, which allowed her to convert $200,000 of clients' assets to her own personal use. In this case, Mr. Knoll did attempt remediation, and that's evidenced not only by his testimony, but also by the testimony of Ms. Castro. It's not the remediation that Relator wanted, because they wanted him to walk back to the office and say, you're fired, get out of here. What he looked at was a secretary who had been faithful for 10 years and now was causing him problems. So let me do what an employer would do and let's say, okay, first of all, I'm reprimanding you for what you've done. That's his yelling and screaming at her. Then he says, okay, here's your task. Now prove to me that you've done the task. That's his oversight of her, that she is, in fact, completing that which he has delegated to her.
But meanwhile, his clients are being disserved. I mean, we're looking at the employer-employee relationship. Don't we have to look at the clients? I mean, he wasn't apparently looking beyond her to what she was doing. Her conduct was the impact her conduct was having on his clients.
Well, I would respectfully respond.
Unfair characterization?
Well, I would respond, Your Honor, that there was certainly more than three cases pending in Mr. Knoll's office at the time that all of these matters arose. And as he testified to, there were a number of cases where, in fact, he was receiving messages. He was getting everything done. Everything was going smoothly. So he had reason to believe that his remedial efforts, in fact, were working. And with respect to the alleged harm to the three people here, the malpractice carrier has paid Ms. Langle, and she testified that she was satisfied with the amount. The Tomko underlying personal injury case, Mr. Knoll refiled that. They have new counsel, and that personal injury case is still pending. And the Rodriguez matter, the malpractice case, is still pending. So they haven't been left without anything at this point in terms of one of them already has a monetary recovery. The other one, the malpractice case, is pending. And in the third one, it's certainly possible that the underlying tortfeasor in the Tomko case will ultimately have to pay that matter, since that case is still pending. So I respectfully disagree with the board's opinion that there was probably economic damages, because they do not make any specific cites to anything in the record that proves that, in fact, economic damages occurred. And
you need to sum up.
I'm sorry?
You need to sum up.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. The case is submitted. You will be advised of our opinion. The marshal will please adjourn court.
All rise.